to learn to walk before you can run, and that's the message Steve Clarke will be preaching after a week that's in League Cup progression and a first championship point. We'll take a look at Reading's draw with Leeds, as well as that win over Colchester in the League Cup, plus news of two new signings, and much more, including our thoughts on that song, right here on the Tylehurst End podcast. My name is Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylehurstend.com, and I'm joined this week by deputy editor Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Yeah, good evening. I'm a bit disappointed it's only the two of us. I think we've got one of the biggest talking points in recent Reading history to bring up, really, with what was happening before, during and after the match. But sadly, nothing that actually took place on the pitch in footballing terms.
Yeah, I think all of our other regular co-hosts, the likes of Handbags, Westy and Rob, I don't think any could bring themselves to really talk about this.
Yeah, scared off.
It's taken a lot of emotional courage for the two of us to get around the microphone today and recount the horrors of those 15 minutes before kickoff.
And the 15 minutes of half-time.
Yeah, you're going to need to fill me in on this because I wasn't there. But okay. We'll come on to that in just a minute. As I said, lots to talk about. Two big games and two big games to preview as well. So stay tuned for that. We'll wrap up all of last week's action first.
View from the Tylehurst End. Recapping this week's championship action.
Well, Johnny, at least we've got a win to talk about. Now, it may not be the most glorious win ever, but Reading went to the Western Homes Community Stadium for League Cup glory and took it. A 1-0 win over Colchester after extra time. Chris Gunter, who only ever seems to score in the League Cup for Reading, getting the winner, I think about 4 minutes before the end of extra time. But it's progression and it's set up a second round game with Portsmouth. What did you take away from the 1-0 win?
Well, I thought it showed really that we're not quite creating those chances yet. And it certainly, I mean, there were a few good, decent chances. Blackman, I think, hit the bar and had a good shot saved as well. So there are opportunities being created. But it was the same sort of typical, slow build up and not quite being able to create chances as freely as we want to right now. The fact that, you know, Chris Gunter on an overlapping run in the 115th minute is the way that finally we get the win, I think is testament to the fact that you might see goals coming from rare places or you might have to try things a few times before it actually gets done. But I guess the other good thing is as well getting minutes into a few other players, because I think we do have a little bit more squad depth than we've had now in the past, certainly.
I think when everyone's fit, not at the moment, judging by the bench on Saturday, yeah, but we'll come on to that in a minute. But no, sorry, go on.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we were never really in trouble, but I think as a Reading fan, you certainly would have liked it to have been a bit more comfortable than it was. But at the same time, you can sort of see why this team is struggling at the
moment.
Yeah,
I mean, I called this 1-0 scoreline, and so did Charles as well, because these early round League Cup games are always the same. We saw it last year at Scunthorpe, we saw it a couple of years ago at Torquay. It's just a case of two sides not really in their rhythm, they've made changes, and it's just the team, usually with a little bit of extra quality, that comes out on top. In saying that, though, you know, you can joke and just say, oh, well, Reading have knocked out Colchester, big whoop. Nine championship sides went out of the League Cup in the first round, and lots of them, obviously Portsmouth, who we've got in round two, went out to, beat Derby. So, you know, it's a good chance to progress. I mean, you know, again, Reading have got a League Two side in the second round. Win that, you're into round three. And it's quite easy to just sort of sneak under the radar in this competition, just as Reading did with the FA Cup, really. I mean, before we knew it, I mean, we were thinking, oh, great, draws against Huddersfield, Cardiff, Derby. Yeah. And, you know, we snuck ourselves to Wembley. So, not suggesting for a minute that we're going to go on a magnificent, glorious League Cup run. But, I mean, getting these wins, especially with the amount of young players we've got, giving them extra opportunities to play games, I think getting as far as you can in this competition is a good thing.
Yeah, and you can sort of see, and I'm sure Steve Clarke will admit it, that the team is struggling to create opportunities at the moment. So if you can get that confidence level up against lower opposition, try a few new things out, a few new players out, a few new tactics out, it's the perfect opportunity, because you can never replicate what you do in training. You can't, it's not the same on the pitch. You have to do it on the pitch against a team that are trying against you in order for it to succeed. So it can only be a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, the only real downside to come out of that game was an unfortunate injury to Dominic Samuel. He was stretchered off. Looks like he's got knee damage. They've had a scan, and at the moment they need to go in for surgery just to have a look to see what's up. But it's not looking great at the moment, but fingers crossed that he makes full recovery, because, you know, he'd come in some good form pre-season, and again, it was games like that were going to be a great chance for him to show what he could do at senior level for Reading. And unfortunately, it's just ended in injury, just like at the end of last season as well with Coventry.
Yeah, and I think it would have been a good opportunity for him this season, because I think he's got He's got a bit of pace, which is something that none of our other strikers particularly have. I mean, I have been impressed by Orlando Saar, but I think Dom Samuel certainly is one of the strikers, a bit like Shane Long that we had 10 years ago. You'd bring him on against a tiring defence in the last 15, 20 minutes and see what he could do. And he's certainly proven that he could do it at League One level. And it is a bit of a step up to the Championship, but I think this could have been a breakout season for him. So I'm hopeful that he can, you know, that it's not as serious as people think.
Yeah, well, let's move on from that. As I said, Portsmouth await in round two on the 25th of August. But back to the meat and drink of the Championship. It was on Sunday. We're starting the home season on a Sunday, especially out of the Premier League. But Leeds were the visitors with 4,000, a full South Stand full of Leeds fans in the sunshine. Great weather for it. Unfortunately, the match maybe didn't quite live up to the crowd.
Yeah, although it was good to see the whole stadium standing for the 21 for Dolan.
Absolutely.
Which was, you know, a really good sort of fan-led idea that eventually, you know, the players got behind, the Leeds fans got behind as well. And yeah, it was really great to see the whole stadium get behind it. It was up on the big screen as well. I think a few people were sort of worried, you know, are people actually going to do this? But no, you know, fair play to everyone around the club as well for making it happen. I think in a sort of subtle way, more than sort of shoving it down people's throats. But yeah, I mean the fare on the pitch wasn't particularly anything to salivate over. It wasn't the most thrilling of matches. But you know, as we said, it's early season form. You can't expect them to come flying out the blocks. They didn't exactly have momentum from last season.
No, two changes to the team. We'll disregard really the changes made for the Colchester game because that was going to happen. But two changes for the Leeds game from that opening day defeat at Birmingham. Michael Hector dropped for Anton Ferdinand and Hal Robson-Canute came in for Aaron Tishbola. Do you agree with both those changes when you walked into the stadium and heard the team?
I wasn't surprised by them. I mean, I said on a couple of podcasts ago, I didn't think Michael Hector would actually start the season, because he's had such a long season when you consider he played for us pretty much the whole of last season, then went to Jamaica for the Copa America, then for the Gold Cup.
Yeah,
I thought, and you know, you see that people from the Copa America are only just coming back to the Premier League. I thought he would get a break. I think he might actually have a break now until the next international window, and then slowly be fed back into the team. And we've seen that Anton Ferdinand is a good player when he can play more than 45 minutes yeah, of a match.
There's a stat going around. Reading haven't conceded a goal with Anton Ferdinand on the pitch.
Well, that tells you all you need to know. How many have we scored, though, with him on the pitch?
Quite a few, actually. I think, really? I think we put a few past Rotherham. Not that exactly is a magnificent achievement, but
no.
What did you make of the general partnership then of him and McShane?
I thought you could tell that there was experience. I think McShane stood out more, but Ferdinand, you know, it was one of those where you'd go to sort of rate them or see how they did after the game. You say, well, McShane made a couple of good clearances, commanded the defence, made a couple of good headers. Ferdinand didn't quite stand out in the same way, but you can make a case for both of them being good for that reason. In the case that Ferdinand didn't make any mistakes, for sure, and you certainly didn't notice that he was there. He just quietly got on with his job. I thought it was a brilliant partnership. The one thing I would be concerned about is when you get a bit of pace against them. I think Chris Wood, you can see what his attribute is. It's the fact that he's 6'4". Whereas, you know, when you
not
get
Sol. Someone,
no. So when you get someone with a bit of pace against them, I'd be interested to see how they cope with that. But, you know, it is the option we have now, because Hector does have a bit more pace about him. You know, does make a couple of mistakes, but I think it could be a bit of a horses for courses in the defence, which isn't something you typically see.
Unless you're Jose Mourinho panicking at half time.
No, quite. Taking off your captain at half time because he's a bit slow. And then justifying that was right because we only lost 3-0.
Well, staying away from Mr. Mourinho then, as I mentioned, Hal Robson-Canute also came into the team. Let's not start this season by bashing Hal.
No.
And in fact, in all seriousness, I don't think you can really bash him for this. If you do, you have to bash the entire front six because really, there wasn't a lot of creativity. If you go and read the further reading column up on the website now, it highlights the general lack of key passes and chances created, highlighted by the fact that of 24 crosses, only 5 found their men. Now, Hal was on the wing. I think one of his crosses may have actually found a man. I think he whipped in one good cross. But somebody behind me, who may or may not have appeared on this podcast in the past, said that to him, the thing that frustrates him about Canute is that he picks the easiest option all the time. Like, there was a couple of instances where he does get into a good position on the byline and just puts a cross in anyway, despite the fact there's one Reading player up against four. Mm. Without, again, Hal, any signs of life?
After the first minute, no. I mean, the first minute, or the first 2 minutes, when he had that brilliant opportunity in on goal, there wasn't really too much to shout about. But like you say, there wasn't really too much to shout about from anyone in the midfield or the attack. I think there was a lot of hustle and bustle, but no real quality. And that's been a problem with Reading for about the last 6 months. You can see that they're all trying. I mean, Danny Williams, he puts a shift and a half in every match, but he doesn't quite have that final ball, that final part. I mean, once he was in on goal and managed to overrun it and the defender cleared. Saar, he looks good, but there has been a question about, is he going to score any goals? Because he does look a bit like he needs it served on a plate to him at the moment. There's no doubting his hold-up play and his link-up play, but I'm sceptical about his finishing.
Well, I don't think he's going to be on penalties anytime soon.
No, not after last week.
On the creativity front, Matt Castle sends in a tweet to at the Tarlest End. He says, our players play too far apart, not enough options on the attack. Compress and you will have 2 to 3 options with each pass. While Pervy Wink says, does the Tarlest End team find it annoying when fans moan about creativity when said players are injured or unavailable?
So the first time I saw that, I thought that said Percy Wink. No. But no, it's Pervy Wink.
It is the Pervy Wink.
An entirely different meaning to that.
Indeed. But what do you think then? Is it a case of should we really be moaning about creativity? Because my point in the comments section on the match report on the website, I said I can absolutely understand the Clark mentality with those players available because there just isn't a lot of creativity. You could argue and say, well, you know, you throw a Jack Stacey in there or something like that, or, you know, a Novakovic. But really, this was a game for me that was very important. Reading didn't lose. Obviously, getting a win was great, but it was much more important not to lose that. Because if you start the season with 2 league defeats, then the pressure's really on. But they've at least got a point on the board. They've got a clean sheet. They've got something to build off.
Yeah, but at the same time, you don't just come for results. You come for entertainment as well. And it's another, what is it, 7 goals in 13, 14 home matches now?
I think Brighton in February was the last time we scored at home.
Yeah, so
might be wrong, but
you know, as I said, it is just continuing where we left off last season, sadly. There's just not much inspiration. Yeah, in terms of the compression or, you know, the expansiveness of our game, there were so many times when, say, Obita had it on the left wing and the only people within 10 yards of him were Leeds players.
Yeah.
And the only option he has is to go backwards. I mean, I haven't seen our most frequent pass, but I imagine it was amongst the back four because there wasn't really much else going on. I think Quinn and Norwood played similar roles in that they try and come deep and then try and create something. Blackman, very ineffective game from him. Kanu, again, pretty ineffective. And Saar just doesn't have the service. It's the same we were saying with Polk last season. He's probably a 20 goal season striker, but he just doesn't have the players around him to deliver that.
Oh yeah, Reading strikers have been feeding off scraps for years, and I do agree with the wink. It is hard to moan about creativity when it's clear that Steve Clark knows about this. That's the reason he's brought in Hurtado, who we'll come on to later, and Alex Fernandez as well. Mm. That's the reason he's brought in players like that, because he realised that there is this dearth of creative options. And when arguably one of the finest wingers in the division is that injured as well in Gareth McCleary,
yeah.
I mean, what choices do you really have? So with that in mind, I completely understood the team selection, and it was very much a case of Reading were going to hope to nick a goal and hang on to it. Unfortunately, they didn't get it. They did have a couple of chances, and you brought one up a minute ago. Hal Robson-Kanu steaming through the defence, and Sol Bamba takes him out. My immediate instinct is red card. I was too far away to see if it was in the box, but I said, that's a red card. And the referee stormed over, Chris Kavanagh, I think it was, and he stormed over, and I thought, he's going to red him. He's going to give him this red. Great, fantastic. Yellow.
Yeah.
And is it too cliche to say that if that had been at any other time apart from the second minute, that's a red? Do you think it was the time?
I don't think that's too cliche. I think that's the option. I mean, I did sort of think at the time maybe there was someone covering, but then you see the replay and you see the freeze frame and there's no one in the vicinity. How Robson-Kanu would have taken it around him and probably shot into the stands. But the referee doesn't know that. It certainly was a red card. I mean, I think I always mention this one. The only time I remember a red card in a Reading game in about the first 10-15 minutes was Sonko at home.
Portsmouth.
I think we lost 2-0.
We did.
In the end, it got sent off in about the 5th or 6th minute. And, you know, aside from that, I just don't remember it. And I think there is that pressure on referees. You can understand why mentally they don't want to make that bigger decision early in the game. But at the same time, there's no reason you shouldn't.
If it's a red card, it's a red card.
It is, but you know, at the same time, I do have a bit of sympathy with the referee. But you know, it's the rules. Them's the rules, as they say. Yeah. And it should have been a red.
I suppose you get much more flack if you give a red card and then you're left with managers saying you've ruined the game, exactly. And then the video evidence comes out that it actually wasn't a red. So yeah. You can. From a human element, you can understand why he's made that call, but it's the wrong decision at the end of the day. And Reading can count themselves unlucky. But for the rest of the game, just not a lot to talk about. I've got to be completely honest. Mm. Orlando Sarr has a good chance in the second half where he cuts in from the left and drills into the side netting. And Danny Williams as well does a fantastic job of robbing the ball in the midfield, drives forward, but just takes the most awful touch.
Yeah.
Literally the sort of touch you'd expect from a five-year-old playing in the park to deny him basically a clean one-on-one. Other than that, Jonathan Bond didn't really have a save to make. Although, I've got to say, this is the first time I've seen him and his distribution did leave me a little bit nervy.
The first one I sort of made an excuse for in that Gunter was under a bit of pressure and played it back to him quite quickly. That was one that he knocked basically on the ground into the middle of the park from about 30 yards. I thought there were excuses for that one, but another time he did just kick it into the stands under very, very little pressure at all. And I think we have to go back to sort of Federici or McCarthy a couple of seasons ago, when inevitably McCarthy, I think, would put one in the stands just about every game. Hopefully it's something he can work on. But yeah, we haven't really seen anything to, you know, say that Al Habsi should be starting instead. If anything, I think you can safely say that Bond's number one after the mistakes that Al Habsi's made in recent weeks.
Well, absolutely. Well, just a couple of thoughts then from yourselves on the game before we move on. Tim Colley says, instant reaction is that is a game we would have lost last season. Much better at the back. And the Indominus Rekstrom says
got
the game
got
was...
some great names in today.
That is the old Jacob...
Oh, I see.
Sundstrom. He's changed his name. He says, the game was pretty dull, which meant I had to listen to Tim Deller wax poetic about Fed's distribution again. We are sorry about that, Indominus.
At least he was talking about Fez distribution rather than anything that happened before or half time.
We will come on to that in pub chat, so stay tuned for our thoughts on all of those things. But in the meantime, that wraps it up. As I said, Reading outside the relegation zone. I think we're 19th as we record this, although there are midweek games.
That's progress.
Yeah, well, both games now this season, we've technically improved our results.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to spin it. That's the Adkins way to spin it.
Yeah. The power of positivity. And with that note, we will move on to some News Bites.
Reading News Bites on the Tarhurst End podcast.
So, News Bites time. As we've mentioned already on the injury front, we've looked at Dominic Samuel, who sadly it seems might be out for a while. We do wish him a speedy recovery and hope that the results of that examination go well and he won't be out for too long. Elsewhere, still no Pavel Pogrebnyak or Gareth McCleary. They're both unlikely to be fit for either Sheffield Wednesday game or the MK Dons game. Steve Clarke, Johnny, going on a bit of a rant against Jamaica for their handling of Gareth McCleary. Apparently he came back with three separate calf tears, which leads you to believe that he was playing through an injury all through especially the Gold Cup campaign. How much sympathy have you got for club managers, or do you think that, well, that's just the nature of international football?
I think a lot of sympathy when you consider that he shouldn't have been playing if he was injured. I mean, you know, I guess there's a bit of onus on the player as well, but, you know, at the same time, you're a player in an international competition getting to the final for the first time in history. You're not going to say to your manager, you know, I'm a little bit hurt, can I miss this one, please, boss? You want to play, you want to create history, you want to create glory. So whilst I can understand Steve Clarke's frustrations, I can probably understand Gareth McCleary wanting to keep it under wraps if that's what he's done.
And he's got history of doing that because obviously he played in Reading's playoff push a couple of seasons ago with a broken back.
Yeah.
For the best part of 2 months. So he's a player that's, you got in a way, you've got to admire it. But at the same point, you've got to say to him, look, if you want a long career in this game, you've got to take better care of yourself. Mm. Hopefully it's not going to be a long term. I think September was still an estimate being put forward. But again, he's missed the sort of bulk of Reading's pre-season. He's got to gel into that new system. Slightly better news for Tariq Fosu. Clarke, again, in his post-match saying he's got a slight chance of being fit for either of those two games. But again, he pointed out, and quite rightly so, he said, look, the guy hasn't even played a full championship game.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you don't expect too much of him.
And yeah, and this is what I was saying on Twitter as well. We seem to be putting our hopes on Tariq Fosu and Aaron Tshibola, neither of whom, well, Tshibola now has played more than 90 minutes of championship football. Tariq Fosu had never played a league game at any level before Derby last season. Aaron Tischbowler had just come back from a League Two relegation fight, and suddenly these were the two new hopes that we were expecting to guide us to better glory in the Championship this season. Steve Clarke sees these players every day in training. He knows their level. We don't. Yes, Tarek Fosu had a great game. Yes, Tischbowler's looked refreshing when he's come on. But the simple fact is, we don't know that they are good enough. And the other thing is, Steve Clarke has shown that he prefers experience. And in terms of the players he's brought in, you can sort of say that bringing Ferdinand in on Saturday might have been a bit of an experience move to put Ferdinand in instead of Hector. I think he will slowly bed them in. He certainly showed no fear of playing them. He brought on Tischbowler on Sunday. But I think we have to be patient with these guys. We can't build them up to be the next great thing.
Absolutely. And Clark's sought to take the pressure off those players by bringing in a couple this week. Two loan moves. Well, one permanent and one loan move that have been mooted for a long time. These are not exactly names coming out of the blue. The first one to be confirmed was Paulo Hurtado. He's the winger that signs from Pacos de Ferreira. I think I've pronounced that correctly, given my previous track record on this podcast of pronunciation. Must be right. Clark said he's a creative player who can play either side of the pitch as well as creating chances for others. Paolo also has an eye for goal. His style of play should complement the players already here, and we look forward to Paolo joining our squad. Now, he's not going to be available for this week. Probably not going to be available for the MK Dons either. He's still awaiting a work permit, and you know how these things can drag on. Johnny, I mean, it's very, very hard to judge these players that come in from abroad. We had up on the Tarlest End, you can go and check it out. We had a YouTube video of some of his highlights. And you can look at the raw stats that say, you know, he's played 153 games, he's 25 and he scored 28 goals. But until you actually see these players playing in the Championship, it's so hard to know whether to get excited.
Yeah, are they going to be Bobby Convey or an Emers Faye? They're the first two players I can think of when you think of exciting, you know, foreign talent that you bring in for a fee. I think he is... I think he's a winger, which is something that we definitely need. You can see that Hal Robson Kanu and Nick Blackman in attack, but also defensively, don't quite have that instinct. And I hope that Hurtado can come in, be creative. Seems like he's got a bit of pace, a bit of trickery, and it's something that we need. And certainly, you know, the fact that we're bringing in players from abroad, so there's something for our scouting network as well, that they've identified these players that I'm sure that if you're a Reading fan, you're not going to say, I think we need? We need someone from, you know, for Paulo Hurtado, a Peruvian winger who's 25, he's got a decent eye for goal. As a Reading fan, that's certainly not the sort of signing you would think we'd go out and make.
Unbelievable. I hear such talk in the Rendezvous all the time. Not the Rendezvous, it doesn't even exist anymore. The Jazz Cafe. From what I've seen, and again, YouTube is incredibly deceptive. Royston Drenthe looks a world beater on there. But from what I have seen, he does look like a player that's happy drifting in and taking a shot on goal. I mean, a goal ratio of, you know, if you look at his professional career, it's about a goal every five games. That's not terrible. The only thing you've got to say to these players is the Championship is so hard. I think Pavel Pogrebniak said over the summer, it's the hardest league he's ever played in. He's played in some big leagues around the world. But he looks like a player that's comfortable cutting in, taking a shot on, and he would seem to fit that formation that Clark seems to like to play, where you've got the central striker and two players that are sort of floating wingers / forwards. So we'll have to see what he can do. Otherwise, Alex Fernandez has come in from Espanyol. It's a season-long loan with a view to a permanent move, I think 3 years if all goes well this season. Again, he's just waiting international clearance, so he's not going to be available for Sheffield Wednesday. His status with the MK Dons game is up in the air. Johnny, when I was looking through his stats, what jumped out, first of all, was that he's only started 14 games of football in the last two seasons. But then when you look at it, and you realise he's only 22, and he's already played 138 times. He's come through the Real Madrid system. I believe the whole hold-up behind the deal was the fact that Reading technically had to work out a deal with Real Madrid just to see if they wanted to buy him back. For some reason, they didn't. so he's arrived. It's a bit more of a... Apparently, he's a bit more of a creative midfielder. Not a great goal-scoring record. 8 goals in his professional career so far. So I don't think we're going to see the new Steve Sidwell. But again, it's something a little bit different.
Yeah, and he, you know, from his comments, he does seem like he says he's a box-to-box midfielder. That's how he describes himself. And I think he can certainly add something to the team, because I don't think we have quite a midfielder in the Gylfi mould. I think that's something that Steve Clarke may be looking for. I think he may have brought in Fernandez to be the person who sort of sits as that second striker, bit of creativity, but can also get back and make a tackle if needed. So I think that's the sort of player that he's going to develop into. You know, we sort of said it earlier in the season. He's been using Danny Williams as that sort of second striker because he's got a bit of hustle about him, but doesn't quite have the quality. I think Fernandes, hopefully, if we read the situation right, is going to bring that little bit of creativity in forward positions that we so desperately need. Unfortunately, I think it might be at the detriment of Oliver Norwood, who I don't think Steve Clarke has ever been a great fan of.
Which is a shame because he's had a really good start to the season.
Yeah, no, he certainly has. But at the same time, you do sort of know his limitations in that he's a bit of a quarterback. And I think Steve Clarke prefers a bit more hustle and bustle in that midfield zone.
Well, exactly why he brought in Chalobah, who is again rumoured with, he's linked with a move to Reading. Nothing's happening at the moment. But that is certainly one to keep an eye on. And it wouldn't really surprise me to see him come back. He doesn't seem to be getting near the Chelsea team.
And I'd be happy to see him back. I mean, there's people saying, you know, we should rely on Tish Boller instead. And this is another point. I hate the cliche, because everything is a results business, but football is a results business. Steve Clarke isn't going to be sitting at home thinking, you know what will get the board on side if I play an 18-year-old in the next game. He'll be thinking, you know what will get the board on side if I win the next game. And right now, with what we know about the players, Chalobah gives you a better chance of winning than Aaron Tish Boller. That's not to put down Aaron Tish Boller. I hope he becomes a great player. But you have to be pragmatic in this situation and say that Chalobah is a good player. I'd be happy to see him back.
Yeah, and especially because if he comes back again and plays for another season, you've got to think that it's along the timeline that, you know, you get a bond with the football club, and maybe it might lead to something permanent. I understand he's on a massive amount at Chelsea, and he's probably still got Premier League ambitions. But again, have a good season with Reading, they sneak into the playoffs, and who knows what can happen. But let's not get carried away. So we'll keep an eye on that one. There's a few other rumours. You can head over to TellSN.com. We're linked with a couple more strikers. So head over to the website now, and you can check up on those. In the meantime, we're going to move on to Pub Chat.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.
Johnny, when we were at Wembley and we had our club anthem that day was Don't Stop Believing, and we were decidedly outsung by Swansea's contingent proudly singing their club song. It's typically Welsh anthem, powerful and inspiring. I don't know about you, but I thought that was probably about as low as the whole Reading song thing was going to get. Forget the whole let's move on Sweet Caroline, let's not move on Sweet Caroline, let's have embrace, let's not have embrace. All of that paled in comparison. I thought that was as low as it could get. Then 2:45 on Sunday happened, with Reading's latest anthem was premiered in front of a receptive audience of Leeds fans.
A merciless audience.
It's safe to say that it was probably one of, if not the most cringeworthy things I've ever had to stand through at the Maleski Stadium. Am I completely overreacting, or is this one that we will be looking back in 10 years and still shaking our heads?
I think we will be. I think we will be, because to me it felt like the Olympic opening ceremony. I mean,
The 2012?
Well, just an Olympic opening ceremony. Okay. And there was a lot of sort of, you know, regalia around it. It was just
flames.
Oh, yeah, the flames as well. I could feel them. I've got sunburn. I had to go home. It was just so. I mean, for the benefit of those who didn't have the pleasure of being there, the music video, this new song that you heard at the intro of this program, played for probably about a minute and a half. Then around 15 Thai people came out, including the owners, the sponsors, etc. Stood there
in replica kit,
including Sir John Medeski in a replica kit and holding an open bottle of champagne. So he'd. He clearly had a few to forget about it. Then around 15 kids with balls came out, like holding footballs. It was just, what is going on? Absolutely, what's going on? At one point, actually, I thought when the chorus hits, they're all standing in line. I thought they're going to break into some sort of choreographed dance. Clearly, they told Sasma, right, don't perform the song. You're going to get mercilessly booed. Just play the music instead. But it's still, I felt that there was something more coming, like some sort of choreographed dance, or you're just going to pull out a microphone. Well, eventually she did pull out a microphone. It was just the whole thing. I mean, I can understand that she wanted and they wanted to present themselves, but it's just such a cultural difference that...
Yeah, you don't see many co-owners coming over and booting a ball into the stand. But no. That was probably the highlight of the things. Yeah, this whole pre-match routine was very, very interesting, as you mentioned.
Very, very interesting. That's a magnanimous way of putting it.
Yeah, combined with the brand new club anthem, again, which you've heard at the start of the show, if you can bear to listen to it. If you want to listen to the full 30-second preview, you can head over to, again, up on the website. It's up on the front page still.
Might make the top 40 on Friday.
Yeah, well, who knows?
We'll have to wait and see.
Let's hope so. A lot of people have been suggesting that it's a stealth way for Thailand to get into Eurovision, because they can go through Reading. It's the whole reason for the takeover, Johnny. What they've done is they've bought a football club to stealthily get into Eurovision.
Aren't they inviting guest nations into
Well, the Australia were in it last time.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, so Australia want a bit of everything. They're in the Oceania. No, they're taking themselves out of Oceania.
Yeah, they
FIFA, haven't they?
Yeah, so they're in the Asian qualifying now. Yeah. But anyway, away from football qualifying. So basically, Pub Chat today is about the match day atmosphere. We want to extend it beyond Saturday, although Sunday's going to form a main part. Beyond my anger, do you know what? The song, I just said it is cringeworthy, but it was cringeworthy in a kind of still a bit funny and enjoyable.
That's what I mean. They mean well, but it's such a cultural difference.
Yeah, but you can chalk that one off. Okay, so you can say it's a completely different culture, and at the end of the day, Lady Sassama has poured money into the football club, and if all she wants is 5 minutes at the start of the season to say something on the mic.
10-15 minutes.
I couldn't hear anything.
I think she wanted a bit
The Leeds fans drowned out anyway, so I have no idea what she was saying. And to put up a cringeworthy music video, I could just about live with that. Mm. What I can't live with is 23 games of DJ Mega Party. Has this guy gotten worse over the summer? Or is it just me? Because he was beyond intolerable on Saturday. And I'm not the only one to say that. You know, we've got a couple of tweets in saying... from Johnny Wells says, who's the new PA guy? What happened to the old one? And how do we get rid of the new guy? Embarrassing. And our good friend Pervy Wink says, he comes up with the other thing, though. He says, apart from Mr. PA announcer, I thought the club made a good effort to create an atmosphere and introduce new owners. Do you agree? DJ Mega Party, Johnny, save me from this rant.
Save us, YTJ. How can I save you? I think we might be getting one of the trademark Johnny rants coming up. Well, I'll try and keep it quite reasoned. It's quite simply, the man just doesn't know football.
Now, head, let's move on.
And the problem is, you had him for, what, I don't know how long we had him for.
That's about 6 months.
Yeah, it feels like forever. very easily, someone could have sat down with him over the off-season and said, okay, this is how you announce a football team, and this is what a football crowd is like. For God's sake, you've been here 6 months. You should know what a football crowd is like. They're certainly not going to partake in any sort of kiss cam. They're not going to, you know, if you go up to them in the stands, which he started doing at half time, saying, so are you enjoying the game? And they were just like, I don't really want to be on television sort of thing. It's just not the way that a football crowd works. And you go to any other away stadium, and we've been to a few, and I swear no other club does this.
No.
So why Reading Football Club feels that it's a good idea to totally manufacture something that has never been done at any other football club is just completely beyond me. Completely beyond me. And the worst bit is, you have this guy on the pitch trying to generate an atmosphere. He had two kids and he was like, roar like Kingsley. And they were just sort of going, and then, you know, he tries to get the East Stand, the South East Stand, the loudest part of the stadium, to give us a roar for the Royals, which is the new phrase, by the way. And they don't do anything. And then the team actually come out, and he says it again, and he must think, oh yes, I've finally done it. But no, the crowd are just reacting to the way crowds have reacted for the last 120 years of football, which is you clap your team when they arrive on the pitch. And if you want to create an atmosphere for yourself, you do it.
The funny thing for me is that the club actually seemed to be making a step forward last season, because they finally realised we need a proper anthem. You know, Embrace wasn't working. It resonated, but it wasn't an anthem. So they got Sweet Caroline. Fans bought into it. And that was a great way, 3-4 minutes before kickoff, of getting the crowd going. And you had Paul Allen, who's been doing the job for, 10, 15 years, shouting back the boys and make some noise. That certainly didn't have a problem getting the crowd revved up in seasons gone by. Especially, you look at 2005-06, don't think anyone...
Wembley this year.
Exactly. So there was nothing wrong. But this guy comes in, takes over the DJ booth, and like you say, he's just making just cringeworthy things. It's like saying, I want to hear a cheer from all the Royals in the stands today, while there's 4,000 Yorkshiremen just literally laughing their heads off.
Yeah.
Now, let's be fair, because Pervy Wink, again, he says that he thinks the club made a good effort to create an atmosphere. And I do agree to a certain extent that you do have to say give begrudging credit, whether you like it or not, to the club for trying to improve the atmosphere at the ground, try new things out, and there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But just some of the basic things he's getting wrong. Sometimes, guys, less is more. If you're listening to this DJ Mega Party, the best thing you do is be anonymous.
But this is the thing. He clearly hasn't been listening. And he's not. And whether it's the club or whether it's him, nothing has changed over the last 6 months. Constructive criticism, is that what we're going to call it that we first gave him? I don't think it was quite constructive. I think it was just criticism. But none of it has been taken on board. It's not an ice hockey game, which I think is where he has come from in terms of the Bracknell Bees and possibly Basingstoke as well. It's not a football match. And, you know, people say, all I want to hear is, number one, Jonathan Bond. Number two, Chris Gunter. Not in a number one, Jonathan Bond. Number two today will be Chris Gunter.
Give me the damn team.
Exactly. You don't, as like I said so many times last year, you don't want it to be a Sudoku or a crossword or some sort of puzzle in order to figure out who's playing on the pitch. It's just the basics, and he could develop into someone who knows his role and can fulfil that role, but it's just not changing.
Yeah.
If this guy's been on a 6 month trial, you definitely don't come to the end of that trial and think, oh yeah, you've done a really good job, fans have really taken to you. You can see all over social media the very, very negative reaction to this guy.
I noticed as well today, and this might be something else, I've not read the job spec, that the club were advertised for a matchday experience coordinator. Now, I wonder what that role entails, or whether that's related to Sunday's woes. But no, listen, again, I'm not going to slam this bloke too much, because at the end of the day, he's just doing a job. And I don't know, and we don't know, whether he might be under instruction from the club. He might have been given a list of things to say in suggestions. You know, this might even come down from the ownership saying, we want these things say. Maybe they've come up with a roar for the Royals thing and they want it belted out. So I'm not going to launch into a personal attack on this bloke. But like you said, on the surface, there doesn't appear to have been much of an effort made to get the basics right. Mm. So for that reason, it's just not good. But I mean, other things around the club are getting better. I like the fact there seemed like another bar outside around the back of the East Stand near the Jazz Cafe. The West Berkshire Brewery still there.
Did you try some Carabao before the game?
Oh, no.
Outside the Mad Stad?
No. Someone sent a tweet saying, is it really wise to be handing out free samples of Carabao to...
Oh, get a bit of energy.
...to kids and stuff. But I don't know. I don't know what the rules are with energy drinks. So
someone around me commented that Hal Robson Canute could probably have done with a bit of Carabao during halftime. Yeah, and someone else said he could probably done with the fire a rocket. But let's move on from that very quickly.
Yeah, so I'm not going to completely bash the club, because they are doing things to try and improve the atmosphere. But again, it's just an annoying system of and pattern of one step forward, two steps back.
I think the thing that fans don't like is the imposing nature of things.
It's not organic, is it?
Sorry?
It's not organic.
No, exactly. I mean, Sweet Caroline, like you say, fans were taking to it in the end, but that was only because they played it at every opportunity for 10 minutes before the 10 minutes leading up to kickoff, and as loud as they could just before you kicked off in the second half as well. This guy is not organic. He's just completely synthetic. You can tell that he's just been brought in and he knows nothing about it. At least someone like Paul Allen, you knew that he was, if he has been replaced by this guy permanently, at least with Paul Allen, you knew that he was a guy who had the club's best interests at heart and was passionate about the club.
Yeah, I hope he's on holiday. I hope he's coming back, because it's 22 more games of this bloke plus cup games. It's just, I'm sorry, guys, this is not working out for me.
No.
It's not me, it's you. and with that, we'll leave it. As I said, if you have got feedback on the atmosphere at the club, if you want to defend them, if you want to slag them off, if you've got... Well, prefer you not to slag them off. Constructive criticism is what we like here. Unless you're Westie and you're talking about Stephen Kelly. So, yeah, please do get in touch. The contact details are still the same. At the Tarlest End is the Twitter. thetarlestend@gmail.com is the email address. You can also go onto the Facebook page as well. facebook.com/thetarlestend. So plenty of ways to get in touch. We'll come on to the rest of the mailbag shortly. But before we come to that, we reference briefly the 2005-2006 atmosphere around the stadium. Obviously a very special year with Reading romping the league with 106 points. On that note, John Keane, who writes on the website as URs1871, is writing a book on that very season. Not just the season itself and what happened, but more how it happened. It's called The Sum of the Parts, and we can speak to John about that now.
The Tarlehurst End Podcast.
By Reading fans,
for Reading fans.
Right, well, as mentioned, I'm delighted to be joined by John Keane, who writes for the Tile East Enders at URs1871. John, you're amongst the first to write for the Tile East End, so it's high time we had you on this show. And I can't think of a better subject to talk about than the 2005-06 team. You're writing a book about it, but tell us where this book is going to differ from the other accounts we've heard on that magnificent season.
Of course, yes. I mean, I think the official club book will effectively be a look at that season and what happened in it. What I'm a lot more interested in isn't just what happened, but how it all came to happen. So all the factors that came together at the same time to make that team quite so good and really shine so brightly, but for such a short time. Because, I mean, one of the things that I think it's fair to say is that every single player in that team had the best spell of their career simultaneously when they were together. And it fascinates me on what made that happen. And I've been delving and interviewing various people who were involved in it. So not just the team, but the coaches, managers, those behind the scenes as well. And I'm finding all sorts of fascinating stuff.
I was going to say, I don't want to give too much away and spoil the book, but any interesting nuggets of information you can share with us from what you've picked up so far?
I spent a really interesting 2 hours with Nicky Hammond, and amongst the things I discovered there was the process that came about to make Steve Coppell the manager, so how he was selected and appointed and who made those decisions. Also, on the more human side, I've spent some time with Ron Graham, the kit man, and of course nobody knows what goes on in a dressing room quite as well as the kit man does. And he's told me so much about what the feeling was like and how close-knit the whole group was, not just the players, but everybody around the team as well.
Well, one of the big successes and the reasons for that success was the spirit of the team. And this book, you know, the sum of the parts looks not just, it's not just your opinions and the opinions of those you interview. It's a real fan effort, isn't it? The fans, you're encouraging the fans to get involved with it. So just exactly how can they be a part of the project?
Right, in fact, there are two ways they can do it. There's what I'm calling the Loyal Royals panel, for want of a better way of calling it. And this is people who I'm interviewing, and I'm having a number of group sessions. I've had a couple so far, and they've been really interesting and a lot of fun and very insightful as well. And that's in-depth interviews, getting people's thoughts, recollections, opinions, and so on. I'm also, through the Facebook page, some OT parts. I will be having sessions where I'm inviting people to comment on players, particular games and so on, so I can trap lots of people's memories, because I don't want this to be just my voice. I want it to be the voice of all the supporters as well.
Excellent. Well, you're going through crowdfunding at the moment to try and get some financial support for the book. But why should people get involved in this early stage of the crowdfunding? What are the rewards involved for taking part and getting your money down now?
There's a whole range of rewards from postcards, coffee mugs, but those are the three main ones that I'd like to push if I can. The more expensive one is the membership of the Loyals Royals panel, where you're intimately involved in what goes into the book and your opinions will be included there. There's also what I'm calling subscribers, where somebody can subscribe to the book, and I'm looking for about 40 people who will have their names on a page in the book, thanking them for helping the production of it. And below that, there's pre-ordering a copy of the book. And really, the urgency is the fact that the crowdfund site that I've been using has decided to shut down. So that's brilliant timing. So I've only got a couple of days to reach my initial target this time out before I'll probably have to go and find another crowdfund site in due course. But to hit my short-term target, I need contributions by this Friday. So it's a little appeal for if people have been thinking about joining up and helping make this happen, now would be a perfect time.
Yeah, and it's worthwhile. I said I've taken part, and if you're worried about, oh well, I don't want my money to be taken straight away, it's not until you've hit the target that the money goes out. So if you're worried about that, I highly encourage you to go in and get involved. I said you've got till Friday the 20th of August as we record this, so if you're hearing this Wednesday night, got a couple of days, you're hearing it Thursday morning, so you've got less than 48 hours. Really do encourage you to get involved. More importantly, John, what is the website address and where can they go to support the sum of the parts?
Right. The crowdfunding website URL is thesumoftheparts.pubslash.com. And that's pub/PUBSLUSH. And there's more information and that link on the Twitter account for the book, which is at some OT parts. And also the Facebook page I mentioned, that's Facebook some OT parts as well.
Yeah, and if you want to get involved as well, you can get in touch with John on Twitter. He's at URS1871. And also the Twitter address for the actual book as well. Is it some OT parts?
Yes, it is, yes.
Excellent. So very highly recommend everyone gets involved. As I said, it's one of the most fascinating seasons in our history, and to find out exactly how that came together is something that all self-interest aside, I can't wait to read about it to find out. As I said, particularly as you mentioned, not just how it came together, but how it all fizzled out so quickly from such glory to such pain and relegation.
Exactly, and I've got some really interesting snippets on that as well. One of the ways that I'm questioning people is I'm saying the fans' perceived wisdom is that X happened, and in most cases, everything the fans believed happened was completely wrong, and I'm getting some really interesting nuggets on that.
Excellent. Well, I can't wait. As I said, please do support. You've got about 48 hours or so from listening to this to get involved. Again, please do head over. There's also an article on the Tarlist and on the front page if you want a bit more information and more contact details. We'll push that up the front page again so you can find that. Meantime, John, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Hopefully we'll get you on a little bit later in the season to get an update, see how it's going.
That'd be lovely. Thanks a lot.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot, John. Take care.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at The Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End.
Thanks once again to all of you who've sent in material for the mailbag. I said we've already read out a fair few tweets, but if you do want to get in touch, I'll just quickly refresh the contact info at The Tarlhurst End, your Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com is your email, and facebook.com/The Tarlhurst End is your Facebook. Johnny, there's no excuse, is there?
None at all.
I give these contact details, is that enough?
And on Twitter, I see now have more than 140 characters in direct messages. So
wow.
If you're someone that is proud enough or lucky enough to be followed by the Tarlist, then by all means, write us an essay.
Yeah, or just, you know, say, can you follow us? Send us a DM. We're nice like that. We'll consider it. Yeah. We'll consider your request. Anyway, and again, if you do get in touch on Twitter, hashtag TTE podcast is a great way to make sure I don't miss tweets, because unfortunately, I'd like to say we're so popular we get hundreds of messages, but even the few we do get, it's easy to miss, so apologies.
The ones of messages we get.
Yeah, the ones. Anyway, those people who have got in touch include Andrew Stagg, who's talking about the Leeds game. He says he likes Saar, hopefully he'll get his first goal soon. Do you think he could play with Pog? If not, what sort of partner would he need?
Yeah, I've been a fan of Orlando Saar as well, especially the fact that he has Orlando Saar on the back of his shirt, rather than just Saar.
Yeah,
see, that's something that's always, we'll go off, slightly off topic now, but if you get, say, Saar and 9, do you think that the club would still charge you a tenner, even though, you know,
two
if you pay by less for the number?
Don't
but know. It's the name that you pay for, because, you know, the players get a little kickback.
I don't know, I know it's usually done by the letter, so yeah. I don't know, maybe just get Saar.
But anyway, Orlando Saar, yeah, no, he's looked very impressive. I think he's got a bit more about him in terms of hold-up play and link-up play than Pog. But like I say, we don't really know how good his finishing is yet, aside from one very poor penalty up at Birmingham, which sadly cost us a point. In terms of a partner he'd need, I think Samuel would have been a perfect partner for him in terms of that pace that you've got. I think if we get to, you know, if we get McCleary on one wing and perhaps Hurtado on the other, that's two pacey wingers, he can certainly bring them into play. Yeah, certainly very positive so far.
Yeah, it'll be hard to see him playing with Prokhorovnyak. I think at the moment, certainly, from what the limited amounts we've seen of Saar, they do look very similar in terms of style. But, you know, two big men could work.
I think Saar's got a bit more grace about him.
A bit more nous. But we'll see. I don't think so. Yeah, and I do think you just need someone with a bit of pace, a bit of guile, to see how it works. I mean, Brian McDermott was trying to get Podgorevnyak and Lafondre into a partnership. But the service just wasn't there.
But again, with those two players, they didn't really have a standout quality.
Just pace. Just get someone with pace in. That's all we ask. Keith says, how much longer do you think Steve Clarke should get? Pressure must be building. A little bit premature. Although, you know, wins haven't been plentiful.
There is a case for the opposition, or, you know, a case for the prosecution,
Clarke
if you will.
Brigade.
Yeah. It hasn't been very good, but I think we saw with someone like Nigel Adkins when he came in. I mean, he got, what, a season and a half? Nearly two seasons in the end. And I think Reading fans are typically more patient than most. I don't think by any means we're in crisis at the moment. But you have to say, the owners are going to look at this and say, well, we've given you a lot of money to invest in this team. If we're not getting returns by November or December, if it isn't getting better on the pitch, if we haven't scored any more goals at home and the crowds are dwindling again, he will be on a very hot seat.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I think at the moment you've certainly got not so much excuses, but mitigating circumstances of missing the likes of McCleary, of Hurtado and Fernandez not having their permission to play, and injuries to the likes of Fosu as well. I mean, even talking about people like Harrops and Canoe still aren't fully fit. So certainly there's no pressure right now unless they get an absolute series of hammerings. I mean, if they get beat 5-0 at Sheffield Wednesday, get smashed at home by the MK Dons as well, then obviously any manager's under pressure. I don't care if you're Arsene Wenger, Steve Clarke or whoever. But I agree with you. I don't think you'll see any sort of panic movements anytime soon. So I think he's got some time. Alex Everson, who says, what position was Harry Robson-Canoe meant to be playing on Sunday? Second striker or left winger / attacker? He drifts so centrally and leaves us very exposed, and I'd quite happily have him leave on a free transfer next summer. Currently bound for lower champ or League One side. Hasn't taken long, Johnny. No. The Hal Robson-Canoe haters have appeared.
Yeah. And I think you've got to agree. I mean, he's such a frustrating player. And there were a few times, especially towards the end of the first half, I think when Abita was carrying a knock as well, that they were just knocking long balls against his wing and leaving Abita one-on-one. And I think that's why Steve Clarke likes those natural wingers, like McCleary, like Hurtado potentially. Because if you've been trained as a striker or sort of a more forward player, you don't have that instinct to get back and protect your fullback. Whereas McCleary, you can see the relationship that McCleary and Gunter have because they do help each other.
Yeah, I'm not going to get on his back. Rare for me, I know, but I'm not going to...
Everyone gets a fresh start at the start of the
season.
He does,
and he was no better or worse than any of that front six. What position was he meant to be playing? I think it's this whole thing of it being a very fluid. Will on our stats desk likes to talk about the fact that formations are largely set. Formations are largely dead now. Yeah. There's usually at least two different ways of playing during a game when you've got the ball, when you haven't. Mm. When we haven't got the ball, he's coming back, he's tracking back. It's a bit more of a 4-5-1. When we're attacking, he's part of a front three almost.
Yeah. It's a bit of a ridiculous comparison, but David Silva, where does he play?
Johnny Williams, I will not have David Silva and Hal Robson-Canoe mentioned in any comparison. Thank you very much. No, I do see what you mean. But it's a big season for him. And I said on the way out to my dad, again, it's not a case of I'm going to sit here and slag Robson-Canoe off for having a bad game. But once again, it's another opportunity lost for him. Because he's had another chance to impress Reading fans. He's had another fresh start. And again, he's just started in lacklustre fashion. So work to be done. He isn't fully fit. It is worth saying that he didn't play a lot of pre-season, but it's a big few months for him and a big few weeks. And if he's got Premier League ambitions, the best way to get a move, play well. So we'll see how he gets on. Dave McCormick says, is our lack of goals poor coaching, bad luck, or the players aren't up to it?
I don't think you want to say it's luck, although there is a certain element of that in the Birmingham game. But I don't think you really came away from many games last season towards the end when we weren't scoring goals saying, oh, we should have got something from that. I mean, sometimes we weren't playing badly, but at the same time, we weren't really creating chances. Players not being up to it, I think that's got something to do with it. There's no one really in that side at the moment that you think...
No one's got an X factor.
No. Blackman rarely. Saar has shown flashes. Quinn, we know how good he can be. But no, there's no one really that inspires you. And the poor coaching, tactically, we are a bit of a mess at times. The way we do pass it around the back four, it is... That game, actually, against Leeds reminded me a little bit of watching Nigel Atkinside.
Yeah, I think you could take the terms of poor coaching. I don't know if it's poor coaching. I think it's very hard to coach when you haven't got a set attacking unit.
Yeah.
You know, if you can't call on the same six players week in, week out, then it's going to be very hard. Or, say, 6 to 8 players. It's going to be very hard to do because... You know, you're constantly adapting, constantly trying to get players up to speed, and it's hard to get a rhythm. If you've got a solid back five, as Reading have largely had now under Steve Clarke, they've had most weeks, they've had a settled goalkeeper, be it Federici or now Bond. You know, Gunter and Abita have been there. Hector's been one of the defenders, and they had Pierce, now they've got McShane. That's easy to do. Up front, it's just been a hodgepodge mess, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Of different names, different faces. So it's when we get all these players fit again, we'll see how that plays out. An email now from Taylor Cornish. He says, just a quick one on the whole striker saga. We've only scored 2 in our last 10 at Medeski, 3 goals in total. And a lot of people are crying out for a striker. The 0-0 with Leeds surprisingly settled me, though, as I thought if we can be as tight at the back as we were against Leeds throughout the season, we aren't going to need a bucket load of goals to make it a successful campaign. However, rewind to Steve Clarke's comments on aiming for promotion and consider that he was chasing Berich at the time. adding a goal scorer of that calibre to our newfound solid defence, and we're not far off a real threat in this league. And he goes on to talk about the search for a 20-goal-a-season striker and the midfielders that almost certainly have more goals than did last season, because it's going to be very hard to see such a dearth of goals from that unit. But he says, basically, what I'm saying is I'm very happy with the position we're in as a club. I believe Steve Clarke will be the man to take us up again. Anyone panicking shouldn't be. Rambling over, enjoy. Thanks very much, Taylor. Yeah, I can't really disagree with too much that, to be honest.
And I think the pressure is now on Steve Clarke for his signings to deliver.
Yeah, very much so. Well, we'll see how those...
Yeah, I mean, you know, Nigel Adkins... So, just to say quickly, Nigel Adkins brought in a lot of his own players, Norwood, Murray...
Cox,
and some of them have done okay, some of them have done well, and by the time he left, he had pretty much created his own side. Steve Clarke has certainly created his own side now. He's brought in 8 or 9 players. And it's, you know, it's going to take time for them to gel, but you know, his head is firmly on the block now. If they don't come off, he's got no excuses.
Absolutely. Sorry, bit of a yawn there. Days getting to me. Still not recovered from Sunday. My apologies. Gary Woodward. He says, Obita was back to his best on Sunday. He had Sam Byram in his pocket. Competition for places seems to work. I'll say Andrew Taylor coming in. He played at Colchester. Do you think that's given Obita the kick up the arse he needs?
I think it has. And it did seem like a bit of an innocuous knock he took on Saturday. I don't know. I think he just twisted his ankle or something.
It was an impact blow, certainly.
On the pitch. And yeah, he was limping around for a long time, sat down a couple of times, much to the mirth of the Leeds fans. But yeah, and you know, I think just the presence of having, because Andrew Taylor?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, very close to coming on, in fact. You know, he was suiting and booting, and they'd put the request in for him to come on. So I think, you know, having that pressure, but also as we said last week or the week before, it's not only the pressure in terms of places, but someone to lean on, someone who's been there and done that, and someone who, you know, can give you experience and impart some wisdom, having played the left back position for a number of years.
Absolutely. Moving on, Ben Print asks, what's the worst pre-match entertainment ever at Reading FC? Mine is Yuri Geller at Elm Park. I was there that day, Johnny. That was my first ever league game.
Oh, what a way to go. What a way to start.
Sat in the Norfolk Road stand. The year was 1995, and someone else was top of the charts. If you haven't heard this story, Yuri Geller, who for some reason was a Reading fan at the time, came to Elm Park. And underneath our seats were a set of coloured cards. I think there was red and yellow. There might have been a third one, I can't remember. And he was going to transmit a colour with the power of his mind to ours. And we were to hold up the colour of card we were seeing in our minds.
Yeah.
Needless to say, it was about half of one.
Yeah.
Half of the other one.
Well, I'd be showing up the red card.
But some reason, I think the club tried to play it off as, oh, I clearly see more of the red card here. Yeah. Yuri, it's worked brilliantly.
It's like on Ready, Steady, Cook, isn't it? Well, I think there's a few more red peppers than green peppers than red tomatoes.
Yeah, Yuri Geller, who apparently fell out with the football club when he wasn't given a load of season tickets. I think that was the reason he went off. I think he then went to Fulham, didn't he?
Possibly.
I think he turned up alongside Michael Jackson. With Al Fayyad.
Has he got a statue as well?
I don't think he did. Maybe he's got like a ceremonial spoon or something.
Yeah.
But anyway, I would agree with you, Ben. That's my most cringe. Johnny, you said off air.
Got one. The one that I remember is it must have been around sort of 99-2000, and before the match, for some reason, they had some guy a bit like a Pavarotti singing. Is it Nessun Dorma or something? The one that goes, oh, you know, something operatic. Anyway. And so they got this guy right in front of the West Stand singing this song, and then suddenly he forgot to put his microphone in front of his mouth, and it was just patently obvious that this guy wasn't actually singing.
Oh.
And it was just a track in the background, and the whole crowd just started laughing at him, and he sort of, you know, huddled off sheepishly. So that was probably my funniest moment of pre-match entertainment.
Yeah, it wasn't pre-match, but also a shout out to one Robbie Savage for doing his Strictly Come Dancing routine at half time during a game.
Do you remember we had like Mr. Woo and Mr. Woof?
Mr. Woo was great.
Hey, those were the golden days of entertainment.
Mr. Woo.
I preferred Mr. Woof.
No.
Mr. Woo was like a Reading fan as well, because
was he?
We brought him back so many times.
He did keep going back. I wonder if he's still doing it.
Well, maybe he was just cheating on us with a lot of clubs.
Whoa.
He said he was a Reading fan, I believe.
Yeah, let's bring back the Woo. Start the campaign now.
And the Woof.
Bring back the Woo and the Woof. I don't know what I don't know how the hashtags would work for that, but we'll try. And that just about wraps up the mailbag for this week. Again, thank you to all of those who have sent in their tweets and messages. Again, at the Tallest End, thetallestend@gmail.com and facebook.com/thetallestend for Facebook. Meantime, just a few other things to look forward to. Got two big championship games to preview in Any Other Business.
The Tallhurst End Podcast. Any Other Business.
Right, we come to the final section in the show. If you're still with us this long, congratulations. The secret prize code for this week is Alpha Papa something or other.
Should give them the YouTube URL to watch Sasuma in the full version.
Yeah, you've reached the Tallhurst End Podcast Unleashed. The non-family friendly version of the show. But anyway, let's wrap this show up, Johnny. Two games for Reading this week. We start tomorrow with a trip to Hillsborough to face Sheffield Wednesday, and then we welcome the MK Dons back to the Medeski for the first time since they were Wimbledon. Although, if you consider the two clubs same, I'm not going to touch that argument with a 10-foot pole.
No.
But anyway, two games for us. I said Hillsborough, a place we narrowly lost last season, 1-0, missed a penalty in that game as well, then conceded a late free kick. This season, they started this campaign by beating Bristol City 2-0. They then knocked Mansfield out of the League Cup before losing 2-1 at last season's playoff semi-finalist Ipswich. So, pretty standard Sheffield Wednesday form, really. They were mid-table side last season and they seem to have started in just a similar fashion.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, you can never really give too much to early season form, to be honest. I think you're always going to have strange results at the start of the season. I think you can sort of understand the results they've had. I mean, Ipswich, obviously, a very good side from last season, and Bristol City just coming up. So perhaps they, you know, might have expected something less there. So I think they've certainly started in decent form. Interesting to note that Kieran Westwood, their first choice goalkeeper, will be missing after injuring his kidneys, I'm told. So they're going to have a teenage keeper called Joe Wildsmith starting for the first time ever in goal. And combined with the fact that we've had the most shots of any championship team in the first two games, you'd hope that we could finally go put a few in the net.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a weird ground for Reading over the years. It's not really a bogey ground. It's not really a happy hunting ground. I remember going 2-0 up in our first season back in the league and then losing 3-2 there. Obviously, we got beat there last season. And then two seasons ago was that absolute 5-2 thumping under Nigel Adkins. So, again, early season, you never really know the strength of the sides. I don't think it should be a game that Reading should particularly fear. I don't think this is a team that's going to be challenging for the top two anyway. At least I don't think so at the moment. So, yeah, they can go there with relative freedom. You know, we mentioned the injury news, so it's likely to be much of the same team-wise. So we'll see how that one goes. And then Saturday, yeah, the MK Dons come to town. The mighty return of one Simon Church. Obviously scored against Reading last year for Charlton. Although he's been mostly on the bench so far for them this season.
He'll get a polite round of applause, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure he will, former championship winner, obviously. The MK Dons started the season in spectacular fashion. They thrashed Rotherham 4-1 at Rotherham. They then knocked Leyton Orient out of the League Cup, but then got beat at home to Preston. So not, again, a bit of a real mix. I mean, they've not been afraid to spend a bit of money. Carl Robinson, obviously a very highly rated young manager, done well. They've risen through the leagues. They were knocking on the door of the championship for a long time and finally made it up last season. So it'll be an interesting test, but that is really a game where Reading, if they haven't beaten Sheffield Wednesday, the pressure's going to be on to get that first win.
Yeah, and that's one thing that you don't want, I think, because MK Dons will probably bring a few fans. And, you know, we've talked so often about momentum bringing up from League One. Carl Robinson, a very good manager. I think that, you know, that could be a very tough one if, as you say, we don't get a result against Sheffield Wednesday. I think the pressure is certainly going to be on for that game. Hopefully we can have some players like Fernandez and Hurtado up to fitness and internationally cleared by
them. Permits and everything, but we'll wait to see on that one. More importantly, you're talking about 3 points. Johnny, you're a man who's already got 3 points on the board in the prediction league.
Yes, I am.
After that correct prediction up at Birmingham. Didn't get it right last week, though. Out of the four of us, I was the only one to get the correct result right. I predicted a 1-1 draw. It was obviously 0-0. So that moves me up into second place. Westy and Charles still yet to get off the mark. So, Johnny, the question comes, what is your prediction? As you are the leader, I'm going to force you to go first. What are you predicting for this game?
I'm going to go for a 3-1 victory away at Sheffield Wednesday. A rare positive, Johnny.
Wow.
Indeed. And in terms of the MK Dons, I think we're going to draw 1-1. I think that momentum, and we're still struggling in front of home support. I think we do. I think there's no coincidence in the fact that we seem to play better away from home at the moment. If you look at the last day of last season in terms of Derby and the performance up at Birmingham.
Yeah. Well, again, as we said earlier, they're lacking the creative players to break down stubborn teams, and that suits them much more away from home than it does at home. But hopefully they should have enough in the locker to beat the MK Dons. In terms of my predictions, I'm going to go for a... I'm going to stick with my 1-1. I'm going to stick with a 1-1 at Hillsborough.
If we draw every game, that's just about survival, isn't it?
Well... we've already lost one, so that would 45 points be a bit dodgy. Be some season though. And for the MK Dons, I think we're sneaking. I think we're sneaking a 1-0 win. So that is how we see it. For the record, Westy reckons we're going to go and win 1-0. So that's two of you predicting a Reading win there.
Westy's had us unbeaten for the season.
Yeah, he's
optimistic man.
Yeah, bold Westy, and he also thinks we're going to beat the MK Dons 2-1. We've got Charles's 1-1 prediction for Sheffield Wednesday, and we will get his thoughts ahead of the MK Dons game on the podcast extra. On the podcast extra note, just a quick apology that there wasn't a show in the end. I got held up in traffic on Friday and missed Charles's open window of recording, and then we just couldn't get together on Saturday because I had a wedding. So weddings, Johnny. It's always weddings with me.
Weddings ruining everything Reading related.
Exactly,
for you.
Exactly. As I record on my four month wedding anniversary here.
Wedding or Reading?
Well, sadly, I've been married to Reading a lot longer.
Yeah, you'd probably take a wedding at the moment rather than watching Reading, wouldn't you?
Well, quite. But we will hopefully record the podcast extra on Friday to get Charles's thoughts and catch up with all the latest news, see if we can figure out when Hurtado and Fernandez like to make their debuts. But that is it from us. Again, I'd just like to encourage you to head over to check out, please check out, you've heard John's thoughts. Go check out The Sum of the Parts. Very much encouraged. Also, you can subscribe to this show on iTunes. And please do head over to thetarlessend.com. Loads of great content, including that further reading from Leeds, a great stats breakdown. We're also going to have a really good column written by a guest writer, Johnny Hunt. He's written on the relationship between mental health and football. So that's all to come, but that's it from us, Johnny. We'll be back next week to recap another couple of Reading games.
Maybe we'll have a few more snippets of the Sassima song if we're lucky.
Wow.
Get your lighters out on Sunday.
Shall we play ourselves out with that song?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, here you go again. Here's that 30 seconds of Sassima. We'll see you next week.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.